let's do this like class. I taught college for a long time. Hold up your hand and I'll point to you. And you can, hi, go ahead, stand up if you don't mind. Hi, what's your name? What's your question? Hi.
First, I'd like to applaud our mayor for taking the position that Providence be a sanctuary city. Second, I'd like to make the comment that I would be willing to pay $5 for a head of lettuce if it provided the workers with a living wage. And third, all of my grandparents are immigrants, and they all came before 1921. And 1921 is the day, is the year, when the immigration law went into effect on a broad scale. Prior to that, unfortunately, it was only Asians who were had limited immigration, but the rest of the world were welcomed with open arms without any documentation. They could all come in. I would guess that most people in this room are, their roots are from those families who came before 1921. And how many of our families would have been legal or illegal at that time if the same today's laws were applied?
Any thoughts from our panel?
Thank you. I think that's fabulous that you know your history on immigration law. Woohoo! it says right. So thank you. Yes, you're absolutely right. Right. We this is a nation of immigrants. Let's face it. The only people that were here before us were the Native Americans, and look what we did to them. And so I think that there needs to be a recognition that at some point, and really, a recognition into your into each of our own histories to say the reality of it is that, you know, you can say that your grandparents came legally, but at the time there was no process, right? People came in on boats, they stopped at Ellis Island, they had a little procedure that they did at Ellis Island, and then as long as you weren't sick, you were allowed to come in. And where's the legality in that other than the fact that you walked in here? A lot of the people that come from Central America do the exact the same thing. They stop at CBP, they're inspected or arrested by CBP or whatever they're doing, and either allowed to come in or deported. So thank you.
And I'll just say some of our reporters for the collaborative up in Vermont are covering the story of people who, given the most recent executive orders, are in the country legally, but they're concerned about shifting immigration status for people who come from Muslim countries, and people are leaving and crossing the border into Quebec. What's interesting about the Canadian border crossing is that if you have your papers in hand on this side of the border, U.S. Border Patrol stops you, takes a look at your papers, says, please continue on. You then walk across the border. The Canadian Mounties say, we're going to arrest you now. Is that okay with you? And they say, yes, of course, because you can't cross over at a border checkpoint if you've already come to seek asylum status here. You have to stay in the United States. If you have an asylum claim here, you can't cross legally by plane or by border checkpoint into Canada. But if you cross over illegally, the Canadians bring you in, they do a background check on you, and they say, you're cool. Stay in touch with us and make sure that you're not going to, and they stay in touch so that they make sure that there's no crimes being committed. It's just fascinating that this is what's happening. People are going in the other direction. Who's got another question for our panel? Hi there. What's your name? Yes, you. There's nobody behind you. Stand up, please.
Hi, I'm Pamela. I want to start off just by thanking the four panelists and the moderator. This was a really interesting discussion, and it would have been much less rich if any one of you weren't here. That said, I want to go all the way back to the beginning of the discussion, where we kind of started off saying, what's a sanctuary city, no PAT definition, and then proceeded kind of saying that applies to Providence. And I'm wondering if that's doing a disservice to our ability to communicate across viewpoints. It seemed like a lot of the discussion that was happening was about whether or not the city is making a kind of positive action by omission that they should be taking in detaining undocumented people, even if there's a civil detainer, or if the city's being, there's an unreasonable ask coming from the federal government saying, you know, and to put my cards out there, I agree with the second viewpoint. I mean, constitutionally and morally, I think it's an unreasonable ask to put that on local police forces. But the notion of sanctuary, right, starts from the idea of religious sanctuary, and it was the idea of going to a place where ordinary things don't apply, right? You go, and we think of that even now in the colloquial sense, right? It's just going for some sanctuary. put the cell phone away, everything, just normal rules aren't there, and it's a safe space, which is not actually what the city is saying, right? We're no one, as far as I've heard, is saying ICE can't come into Providence, we're providing sanctuary. What's being said, and being said by all the cities we're labeling as sanctuary cities, is we're not going to do your job with our funds and no training and apply this. And is using the term blurring that message? Is there a way of saying we're welcoming, we want to have a good relationship with you without, would it be better to not use the term sanctuary city?
It's a great question. It's a really great question. One that I wish that I'd asked.
That really is a great question. And it's something that I was reflecting on earlier today. You know, if we had it to go, if we could go back and do it all over again, I think that we would have had some conversations among mayors very early on about, you know, what phrase and what term do we want to own? Because sanctuary is such a loaded term, and it brings different connotations, and it, you know, charges up emotions. And I think that what better reflects what we are is we're a welcoming city. And I don't know if that's also a charged term and has its own connotations, but you know, to me, what a sanctuary city means is that if you're here, you will never be asked by law enforcement what your immigration status is. That's all that it means. And you know, beyond that, we're also not going to enforce, you know, federal immigration law. That's not our job. But that first message was meant to be a very reassuring one to the entire community, that you should never feel threatened or anxious about calling the local police department. And perhaps welcoming city sends that message better or more effectively than does a sanctuary city. But here we are. Here we are. You know, we, you know, I think that what's behind your question as well is I also appreciate that everyone was here and everyone contributed to the conversation. And you know, if we rule out some of the extreme cases and extreme viewpoints, there is common ground that we can find here. We come from very similar places, and you know, I sense that as well. And that's why I think that we can win the narrative. It's just a matter of getting the message out effectively. So perhaps we can get it out more effectively with different terms. You may be right, but here we are.
Hi, in the back. Hi, please. What's your name?
My name is Anna Jane. Hi, everyone. So I've been hearing a lot about the Community Safety Act, which is the proposed city ordinance in Providence, which would codify a lot of the things you're talking about with compliance with other law enforcement agencies like ICE. And Mayor, I was wondering what your stance is and what you're going to do.
Okay, so the Community Safety Act, it's really important. The Community Safety Act is about 15 ordinances in one. It is the most comprehensive ordinance of its kind in the entire country. And so, you know, we've been working through, you know, a number of different provisions. You know, I'm very supportive of, frankly, most of it. It's like 95% of it. And we've been getting it to the point where, you know, it not only furthers the policy, the important policies behind it, but it's also workable. And the one small aspect of it that deals with immigration, you know, we're looking at that right now. You know, what it would do it is it would codify what is our official policy. And you know, we have to be careful. If you know, I do think that the federal government is on thin ice in trying to withhold federal funds. But it could be that, I mean, everything is, you know, seems like everything is upside down nowadays. You know, they might make a play on cities that have, you know, codified what their official policy has already been. And so, you know, we're looking at that closely. The position that I've taken from the very beginning is that it's much more important what you do than what you say. And our policy has been very clear from the very beginning that we're not going to enforce federal immigration law. We're not going to ask folks about their immigration status. Folks should feel safe and comfortable here. As long as I'm mayor, so knock on wood, hopefully it'll be for a while, that will be the policy here in the city. But we're looking at whether it makes sense to codify that.
The gentleman right here, and then the gentleman behind him. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Rich, and I have a question on, I want to know, what is an example of a city that is not a sanctuary city? And what are they doing there to the disadvantage of the population in a city like that? We have many that are not sanctuary cities.
Commissioner, do you have a thought on that? He'd hit his microphone, I noticed.
You know, it goes back to what's the definition of a sanctuary city. So, you know, you have places in which police chiefs are engaging in sweeps with ICE. You have police chiefs that are proactively doing some things that, whether that works for them out in the Midwest or wherever, it certainly doesn't work here for Providence, and it's certainly something that I'm not used to being in law enforcement. So I don't know a city that's not a sanctuary city. I think going back to the point of, you know, I have colleagues in law enforcement that kind of frown upon me as being the commissioner of public safety for Providence, which has been deemed a sanctuary city, because they think that the definition of that is that we welcome criminals that are here undocumented and that we harbor and protect those. And so it really is, you know, that word that goes back probably 15 years when we started using sanctuary on this issue. And I think it's gotten a bad term and a definition from where you sit. I don't know other cities that are not a sanctuary city and what the difference is. I do know that I'm a board member of the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and we've taken the position that the federal government should not be mandating to state and local law enforcement the enforcement of immigration. If you want to participate voluntarily, and that city mayor or manager and that police chief, then it's their prerogative to do that. That doesn't work here in Providence or in the state. Mm.
The gentleman there. Hi, sir. What's your name?
Thank you, Bill. I think what we can all agree upon is that Donald Trump did not set immigration law. That was established by Congress, the latest one probably back in 86, right, that most of us think was a good model, except, but it hasn't been enforced, all right? Professor, your idea of immigration reform is to do that again and make the same promises again. Well, we've done that, it didn't work so well. I don't know why it would work again this time, okay? Commissioner Perry, you say that you need the community's help to enforce the laws in Rhode Island. That's true, I believe that, right? You cannot possibly be out and see every crime that's committed. You need the people to tell you about it. Well, the national people need the same help from the local law enforcement people. There's only 20,000 law enforcement people working in immigration law. All right. They need your help. How can you justify not giving them that help?
You want to go first?
I'll yield to my counsel.
So I don't know that it was a question more than a comment, which is to say that I support some sort of amnesty. I do. And I think for a lot of the reasons that go on that we've just talked about today, right? The fact that these people have been living here for a long period of time. The fact that they contribute to our economy.
You may, although I
didn't finish mine, but that's okay.
The state be actually establishing its own immigration law by saying, if you're an illegal immigrant in this state, you're allowed to stay as long as you don't commit a serious crime?
No, because again, right, that immigration laws can only be enforced and written by the feds, right? Federal government is really the only place that has authority to do that, certainly not the state. So the fact that it's not though, right? Because we're not saying come to the state of Rhode Island. People come to the state of Rhode Island for a variety of reasons, none of which I could tell you other than maybe they have family here, right? why would people come here other than family?
You're
okay,
not on the tours of Florida, are you?
Okay. I retract that statement. Don't. I love living in Rhode Island. I love Rhode Island.
Nobody's going to ask you to cut a commercial anytime soon.
Thank you, please. Are we going to commercial
yes,
right now?
Yes, please.
But warmer. Touche.
Thank you.
Touche. We need immigration reform, right? But I don't think that people who have serious criminal records should be entitled to that. And even in the 80s, that wasn't the case. I do want to just say to you, and preface by saying that there was another law that came in 1996 under President Clinton that was quite draconian as it related to crimes and really deported people from minimal crimes, such as, for example, you know, let's say a petty theft, right? So somebody went to the grocery store, stole a banana because they were hungry, and they walk out, and now they're charged with shoplifting, which in Rhode Island is a misdemeanor. Under immigration law, that may be a crime involving moral turpitude, which could get that person deported. And that was in 1996. I don't think that those laws will go away. But I do think that for the people that have been living here for a long period of time, who've contributed to our economy, who are part of the fabric of our society, should be allowed to stay.
And Commissioner, the second part of his question was really to you. And I asked you sort of a version of this, but I think what he's talking about is the help that federal immigration officials need from you. You're asking for help from the community. They're asking for help from you.
Sure, I understand that. But when it's a problem that's existed for decades, and now you have millions of people here, don't force the local government to now start enforcing. That's why I started talking about, you know, it's a congressional issue that's been ignored by both parties for a number of years. And to solve it at the local level just aggravates everything. You need to start dealing with it in Congress with comprehensive immigration reform. And without that, all these other things that we're trying to deal with continues to persist. And you're putting it on the backs of local law enforcement. Of course, we want to cooperate with our federal partners, and we do. On this issue, we don't have the resources or the expertise to enforce a policy and a law that's been broken for nearly 30 years.
So who else has questions? We've got time for a few more here. Hi, go ahead. You with glasses? Yes. Yes, I'm sorry. And then you after that. Thank you. Go ahead. Yes. Everyone has glasses. Okay.
Okay. Thank you all for being here. My name is Carla. My question is for Leanne. Dan, I think you kind of touched upon this a little bit, but I just guess wanted a little bit more of an answer. You spoke about the lines being blurred between legal and illegal immigration. And I think it should just be clear that I think for undocumented citizens, I think things are very far from that. I think people who are undocumented walk outside differently. They are afraid of calling their local police departments. They're literally looked at differently. I mean, how exactly would you say that the lines are being blurred?
I think the lines are blurred when we have the discussion when people just say immigration, and that immigrants have built this country. Going back to what you said about people's ancestors coming here, and there wasn't that policy in place, but there is that policy in place now. The fact is that there is a policy in place, there are immigration laws, and it is set to protect the citizens of this country and to protect the sovereignty of this country, and we're undermining that by allowing people to go around that law. And I think that for those people that do live that way, I am sorry for them. But there's no easy fix for that. There's no easy way to just take that all away. Even if we look at immigration reform, like we talked about, it's not a simple answer. It's not just an amnesty for everyone, because they haven't gone through the process that they need to go through to become legal, to become citizens. That is a process. It involves lawyers. It involves fees. It involves learning English. It involves becoming part of that society. And we're really doing a disservice to people by having these two groups of people. And it's like you have an underground economy that's flourishing for whatever reason, because we're letting it, because we haven't addressed those problems. And if we address it on the local level, the state level, the federal level, it needs to be addressed. And I think one thing that probably won't be popular in this room, but I think that we should thank President Donald Trump, because that's why we're having this conversation now. And if we weren't having this conversation, we wouldn't be getting to the roots of these problems. And it would still have people living in those shadows and walking with their heads down. And it's time that we address that. It might not be the way that people want it addressed. It might not be the way that everyone feels is the same, but it's about finding that common ground and doing something that we can work with going forward and enforcing our laws and putting that system in place that will work for the majority of the country.
Hi, go ahead. You had a question? Go ahead, stand up.
Yeah,
and then we'll have time for one more.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. Like all the other question askers, I want to say thank you, the whole panel. Super interesting. My question is mostly for the commissioner, but
also for all of you. You've been speaking a lot about how local police don't really have the expertise or the knowledge on immigration. And I was wondering, is there any sort of initiative or program that you know of, maybe perhaps happening in another city, to help train local police officers to know more about immigration law and immigration policy? Or if you think there's even a need for something like that in today's political climate?
Yes, so there's been an effort on this 287G training, where local law enforcement can get trained up and trained up to make determinations on the immigration status of individuals and then have the legal authority to hold and detain. That's happening. It happened here with my agency after I retired because I objected to that function for the state police, but it happened after I retired. And I, as I said, I don't believe we should be immigration officers. It has that chilling effect on the community, and the state police did it, and they have a different community in which they're policing. But at the local level, that I've been for 6 years, I really see the importance of that trust and bond. And don't misunderstand me. If you are a criminal, we want you out of here. I'm talking about people that have been here for decades and living here undocumented. We shouldn't be trained to enforce immigration law. We should change the immigration policy and the law. And I don't thank President Trump. I would be more appreciative if he went to Congress and worked with Congress for comprehensive immigration reform.
Sir, and then we have a question over here. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, what does a roundup look like? And does it ever work?
Yeah.
So in 2009, I believe it was, or 2007, ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, conducted a raid at a factory in New Bedford that does vests for our Army. And what that looks like is very many ICE officers who have guns to go into an employer's place of business, identify themselves, and ask to see immigration documentation pursuant to the I-9s that employers have to collect, and then asked their employees to identify themselves with their name and the country of birth and where they're from and what their immigration status is. Many of the people during that raid, there were 300 employees at that raid back then, all of them, the majority of them were women, and all of them were detained. That caused their children who needed to get picked up to not be picked up. That caused a lot of family separation. That caused children who were infants who needed to be breastfed to not be. And so I think since then, in my experience as a lawyer in this area in immigration, that has not occurred. And I think because of the debacle that occurred back at Bianco in 2007, I believe it was 2007. And so I think that they're no longer doing it that way. But what they will do now is maybe, and they had a raid, I want to say that was 2009 at the Gillette Stadium. The ICE officer at that raid went to Gillette while the undocumented immigrants were cleaning off the snow because it was going to be a game on that Sunday night. And what they did was they went in there, they took everybody to their trucks, had them fill out paperwork and give their name and address and told them to appear at the ICE office with their immigration documents, and then sent them back to work. Because there was going to be a game that Sunday, and we needed the seat.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
God forbid you mess up with the Patriots, right? Yeah.
There was a Patriots game that Sunday. That's no joke. Like, this happened. And go Pats. but, you know, that's what these raids look like. And so after that, there was this, you know, all of these immigrants then had to report to ICE and get placed in removal proceedings or whatever they did.
And, ma'am, hi, you have got the last question because we're out of time. Yeah, please stand up.
My question is for Commissioner Carey and the mayor. But first of all, I just want to say that my grandparents also came at the turn of the 20th century. They were immigrants. But there were no social welfare programs at the time. So that changes the whole conversation. That's a conversation for another day. Commissioner Perry, you said, I just wanted you to clarify something for me because I think I misunderstood what you said. Did you say that that people who have a criminal warrant, if ICE does not pick them up within, I think you said 6 hours, that are they released?
Yes.
Okay, so what kind of crimes would that?
So let me clarify that. So if California has a warrant and we arrest on that warrant, we hold only for a period of time. It's California's obligation to come to Rhode Island. And if they don't, then we don't have the legal right to continue indefinitely. So getting back to the ICE, so it all depends on the circumstances. We're talking about someone that gets arrested only based on a criminal deportation warrant. Somebody that committed a violent crime, who's been deported back to their home country and re-entered.
Okay.
And so there'll be a warrant issued by a court for the arrest of that individual. We happen to come on that upon that person, and that's all the charge we have. We have nothing else, so we're going to be bringing a criminal charge. We'll make an arrest. We'll make sure that the warrant is still active, that it hasn't been, you know, taken out of the system, and then we'll give ICE a period of time to come. If they say Friday night, we can't get there till Monday, we're not taking that liability of holding for the weekend.
But the warrant is on the reentry crime.
Yes.
But what happens if it's a violent crime that's committed in Providence by a Providence resident? What happens to that person? The person who's illegal gets let go, but what happens to the person that lives in that's a resident?
So you're talking two different things. You're talking clearly two different things. When you talk about a Providence resident getting arrested on a violent crime in which we bring a charge, we arrest, and we bring to the court, and that person is arraigned before the court, and bail is set or may not be set. That's the court's prerogative. On the other circumstance, any warrant that we arrest on for another agency, they're responsible to come and pick that prisoner up within a period of time. When I say we'll release that person if ICE doesn't come within a reasonable period of time, that's on a warrant, not a violent crime. That's on a reentry criminal violation.
But you said it stemmed from a violent crime.
It doesn't stem. No, I said this person was convicted on a violent crime that's already been adjudicated. So it could be 2 years ago or 15 years ago.
And they were deported.
Because it's a violent crime. So if someone illegally in Providence who commits a violent crime,
yes,
what happens then if ICE doesn't come within that 6 hours? What happens to them?
They get released. Let me.
Not if they committed another crime. If they committed a second violent crime, I think is what she said.
If. Okay, so if this is a subsequent crime, a violent crime, I walk through that person, whether documented or not, gets brought before the court, and depending on their record, will be held in jail until. Maybe you and I can talk on the side.
Yeah, and I think probably that's probably what we have to do, just because we're out of time and we want to let the rest of the panelists go. Thank you all so much. You're a wonderful audience. Thank you for the great questions. Thank you.